This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stacey Dales, take it away.
Stacey Dales, NFL Network correspondent.
Doing great. Good morning, everybody.
Breaking down the Bears-beating news around the NFL.
We have next-level hair here at the Combine, and when I say hair, I'm a big fan of mullets.
Former WNBA star.
And the ball stolen away. Didn't see her coming, and Perkins gets the clean steal. Over to Dales, easy layup. Stacey Dales off a beautiful feed from Elaine Powell.
Stacey Dales with Mully and Haw.
And I live in Chicago, and I do The Score radio. A little plug there.
On 670 The Score.
Welcome back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky in for Mully today. Now we get a chance to go to The Score hotline brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com, where we find the NFL Network Stacey Dales, who spent the week at the NFL Combine in Indianapolis and did everything except for run the 40. Good morning, Stacey. How are you?
Well, I feel like I ran the 40 like every day about 10 times a day. So in my mind, mentally, David, I did run the 40, and I'm feeling it on Tuesday. So
you did a great job. You were all over every aspect of the coverage. Really appreciated that as a viewer and certainly as a professional. I wondered, when you have the takeaways, and there's not just one thing that comes to mind, but did you learn anything that you think is significant moving forward that pertains to the Bears that you didn't know before going to Indy?
Not really. I mean, I think that, you know, we're going to see collectively a really deep group of defensive linemen here in this draft. I mean, you're probably going to see a record taken in the first round alone. Defensive tackle is especially deep. I think that was confirmed when I was on the field with those guys on the first day of our coverage. And there's no secrets, you know, what the Bears, you know, teams are always going to say, you know, we're going to draft value over need. But, like, when you have such glaring needs at certain spots that are difference-making spots in order to win Super Bowls, I just feel like the trench work this offseason in pro days and from the combine now moving forward is going to be and has to be a huge focus for Ryan Poles and his team. And there's a lot of defensive tackles. I mean, I think there's good depth. My takeaway on the offensive linemen is there's good depth. There may not be some of the, you know, cornerstone pieces that, you know, we've seen kind of jump off in the first round at the offensive line, but I just feel like really for both sides of the trenches is going to be a huge focus for the Bears.
Stacey, tell us about Will Campbell, because there's been so much talk about his arm length, and I find it funny, right? Because the tape tells all, and it sounds like Will Campbell's answers to all of the questions about his arm length were just really hit the nail on the head. So I'm curious what you learned just spending time with him, being around him, and getting to talk to him.
Ruthie loves Will Campbell. Love. I mean, this is you got a deep, like, baritone southern draw coming to your team. And he is he's a firm kid originally out of Louisiana. He is a delight, and he's got a nasty streak. He and I spoke at length about his, we had him on camera, but I get a lot of time around these players, and this is no different. My takeaway on the arm stuff with him is, and he's 32 5/8". By and large, that's considered not ideal for a tackle. I mean, that's what he wants to play. Now, some are going to say because of the arms, he's going to bump into guard. But as he and I discussed, this is no different than Rashawn Slater, right? Remember at a Northwestern, and now he's playing at an all-pro level in the NFL. Peter Skoronski, who's a local guy here. These guys have heard these criticisms their entire lives. And what can't we do in life? We can't change how we're born and the biology of how we're made. So the only thing that you can overcome things with, which are considered deficits in life, is your brain and your mind and how you work and how you compensate. That's what Will Campbell does. He missed one start in addition to their bowl game this past year, a freshman start. So he's a 3-year starter at left tackle out of LSU. He makes that very known. And he's got the mindset that this was something he was always going to deal with. As he explained it to me, people said this about me in high school, and I went to LSU, and I was incredible. And then people are saying about it now, and I'm going to the NFL, and I'm going to be incredible at the next level. And as he explained it to me, you block with your feet. And so I don't see this for me, having spent time with him. And like you said, Ruthie, you watch this guy play. He blocked for Jaden Daniels at one point. I feel pretty good about him, his potential at the next level. And I don't think arm length is going to stop him from being, the type of caliber player where he should be drafted, which is it should be pretty early in the first round.
Abdul Carter received some alarming news during the week. Maybe it wasn't news to him, but the purpose of the NFL Combine originally was because of his proximity to the hospitals and the medical reports. And the medical report on Abdul Carter was a stress reaction in his foot. Even if he doesn't require surgery, it might raise some red flags about the future health of an edge rusher as dynamic and disruptive as he is. What did you think about that report, and how do you think it will affect where he's drafted?
Yeah, well, here's what was interesting, David, for me on Abdul Carter, because I talked to him one-on-one after his press conference, and this was prior to the information about his stress fracture or stress reaction in his foot, which is overcomable. He explained it to me, one of the reasons he wasn't, besides potentially being the number one overall pick, because he's the number one player on most people's big boards. I mean, you could argue there's probably three, but he's right up there at the top of our guy, Daniel Jeremiah. He told me that he's still working through his left rotator cuff issue. And so that was kind of something he was focused on from a medical standpoint. And then within several hours from that conversation that I had with him, it became the stress reaction in his foot. My conversations with scouts was the takeaway was it's not a concern. He's not going to have surgery as we know it to be right now. But my takeaway was like he's got plenty of time to heal up. Listen, I had multiple stress fractures in my career. They take time. You can't do anything. You have to just rest them so they heal. It's obviously not a compound fracture. What is a stress fracture? Right? It's a stress point that has the potential of like being kind of a hairline problem. It's very painful. When I played through stress fractures in basketball, I had to get shots of Toradol in order to play, which is not great, but that's what I had to do. It completely wipes the pain away. The only way to heal a stress fracture, unless you there are surgical things you can do, but the only way to heal it is to not do anything on it. So I don't know how that's going to impact his pro day, but my takeaway is it's not going to impact where he gets drafted, and so I don't think it's an issue, but we'll see.
A lot of conversation about Ashton Jeanty potentially being there at number 10 for the Bears.
Yes.
And I know this is, the more we learn and talk to people, and this is why I'm asking you, Stacey, this seems like a very deep running back class to me. And I just don't think that, let me ask you, is there a huge drop off between Ashton Jeanty and someone that the Bears could get maybe in later rounds?
Well, yeah, I think Ashton Jeanty's different. So, yeah. I think he's by and large, Ruthie. Okay, so I'm so glad you brought this up because I was really floored being around him.
Mm.
He is for me the clear cut, Listen, I love some of these guys. Caleb Johnson out of Iowa. This guy's going to be a burner. Like, and he's 6'2", 6'1". He's a big back. Mm-hmm. You mentioned some of these other guys. Omarion Hampton, Travion Henderson. So Hampton out of North Carolina, Henderson out of Ohio State, Quinshon Judkins out of Ohio State. These are all really going to be good. And you're right, Ruthie, this is deep. Did you guys see Bashiel Tutin run? Like, he was flying on the 40, and really great young man. Being around Ashton Jeanty, it's like being around he's an old soul now. Like, he is so cool, and he is so chill, and he is really smart, and he is, you know, one of the comments he mentioned during the week was, like, when I'm in the backfield, I'm relaxed. He sees the game like, you know, a guy who's played it for 40 years and, you know, is sitting back there watching his greatness. Like, he's really special, and his personality is special. It's dynamic. He's going to take coaching really well. One of the things he did, and not many players do this with me, is when I always like to know the feedback they're getting in meetings, and he told me about all the good things, right? He's a three-down back. He's a brilliant runner. He gave me the bad stuff, too, that teams had told him. Most players don't share that because they want their stock to stay high. So he gave me the constructive criticism. He's got to be a better technical blocker. He has to do a better job of ball security, although he only had 4 fumbles last year. He had 30 touchdowns last season. One of those was a passing touchdown, I believe, but 29 rushing touchdowns out of Boise State. I think he's just going to be a production machine. He's super methodical in the backfield, and I think he's going to play wise beyond his years next year in the NFL. I think he's a slam dunk, you know, top 15 pick.
What quarterbacks surprised you the most in a good or bad way?
Tyler Shuck. Surprised me just being around him. The big thing on him is his age. He's pro ready. Like, he is pro ready. He was just out there, and he has like Philip Rivers energy. So I think he's going to get drafted pretty good in this one. I'm not, obviously not first round, probably not second, but maybe late, like third, maybe late second. I don't know. I think he's got a great football acumen, and that's, you know, it's going to impress teams. Jackson Dart's name, there's not anything bad that I keep hearing about him, and I think that bodes well. But the one for me that was just incredible was Cam Ward. Being around him, he's got, I would say, a blend, you guys, of like the energy of a combination of C.J. Stroud and Jaden Daniels, his energy. He's like off the charts, quietly competitive, and mostly quietly confident. Like, he believes he's coming into the NFL to change the game, but he's not gonna like flash diamonds in your face on it. He's just gonna come and do it. He was incredibly impressive to me. I loved his demeanor. He is so humble. He is such a kind soul. He's another old soul like Ashton Jeanty, and he wanted to be out there performing, and he couldn't. He had a ball the entire time. Not unlike you'd have a basketball, like, you know, doing figure eights on the court, just standing watching people play. Like, he had the ball the entire time. He eats, breathes, and sleeps football. He's going to go really high, and we'll see what happens with Shedeur Sanders.
What else did you see in terms of the offensive linemen that the Bears might be looking at besides Will Campbell, the Kelvin Banks, and maybe some other guys that might have stood out?
Yeah, Kelvin Banks, massive, massive man. I mean, he was physically the most imposing that I stood with. I mean, he is, and I'm talking like broad shoulder to broad shoulder. He is a wide body, delightful human being, delightful. I mean, he was raised right. Like, this is a great kid. And he's going to go pretty high in this draft. We talked about Will Campbell. I think there's a couple interior linemen that are really impressive. Tyler Booker out of Alabama, that guy's going to be a slam dunk. Like, everything about his mindset and mentality. Now, he played at guard inside at Alabama. I think he's going to have some position versatility, some position flex because of his mindset. Like, if you were in a pinch and you had to put him out at tackle, he is such a nasty mindset that he could probably go out there and win. So I think those guys stand out. I mean, there's so many in my head right now, David, it's kind of a blur, but Grace Abel is going to be able to play anywhere for you. Like, you could probably plug him in and play center, and he'll do a great job. Like, Cam Jurgens coming out of Nebraska was, I think, a guard, and he's now the center of the Philadelphia Eagles. I see similarities with Grace Abel. He was bigger than I thought, like, physically. Just when I, because I'm 6 feet, you guys know, and when I stand with these guys, I can feel their size, and he's bigger than I thought he was.
Before I let you go, who was your favorite mulleted prospect since you had to go in your power rankings?
Well, you know, Tim, can we all just, like, have some levity and just relax? Like, I put that report on because I went into the day, Tate Ratledge out of Georgia is my he's my favorite lineman. I always come away with a favorite, and he definitely was my favorite. He's had the best mullet, I would say, over the last 5 years, and he's had it for 5 years. So why wouldn't it be, right? When you rock a mullet that long, you've got to love it and cherish and take care of it. But you know, I put that report up, and people are like, "Why?" Because people, we do 6 hours of live coverage every day, and when they run the 40, and you got a mullet, you better damn well believe we're going to talk about him. And then the personality backs it up. Like, I think if this guy can stay healthy, he's going to be a fine addition to a locker room. He's got a great personality. Kind of just want to go drink beer with him, but he's really cool and definitely the best mullet over the past 5 years for me.
The slow-mo of the hair on the 40. It was just, it was incredible.
That was very good. That was entertaining. You have to have some fun when you're there that long and you do as much serious coverage as you guys do.
Yes, you do. And this is where I get to know these players, and this is where their draft journey starts. And it's every bit as fun. And when they're proud of their mullet, or they're proud of their mustache, or they're proud of how fast they are, or how quick they change direction, like, I want them to say all of that. And my job is there. I'm there to facilitate that. And so it's fun to be a part of it. And, you know, it's when you come out of it, though, like I said, when we started, you feel like you've run 40, you know, 10, 40, you know, yard sprints in every day that you're doing it. So it's great. But I'm draft ready. I'm already draft ready.
Well, rest up. It's a long time before the draft. You did a great job, and we really appreciate you joining us this morning,
Stacey. You're the best to do it, Stacey. You really are.
Appreciate you guys so much. Thank you.
Stacey Dales from the NFL Network giving us her impressions of draft week. The Abdul Carter thing is really something I think coming out of the combine interests me and intrigues me, because you see educated, qualified people who are evaluators not be totally scared off by a stress reaction in the foot of an edge rusher whose explosiveness defines him. Because I do think that would be something that would be one of the bigger concerns.
And you hear Stacey talk about the best way to heal that is to literally not do anything. So does that mean that he's not working out or training or, you know, it? But clearly, you know, tape don't lie. Ball don't lie. Don't lie.
We'll keep an eye on that story. Also, before we break here, because we have our whip around coming up after when we come back, good news out of Cubs camp. PCA plans to be back in the lineup today.
Are you? What's kind of the timeline here?
No, I'm back in there today. That's the plan. Yeah, we're gonna just go through a regular day and keep it at that.
So save his seat on the plane. He's gonna be on the Tokyo trip.
Just make sure it's lie flat. Make sure it's lie flat.
Maybe. See, this is nothing to worry about. I like it when things that they say aren't worth worrying about aren't worth worrying about. It's like this never happened. Thank you, Pete Crow Armstrong, for removing that doubt. He's going to be back in action today, wreaking havoc on the base paths, creating disruptions for the pitchers, and giving Cubs fans reasons for hope moving forward. All right, when we come back, it's going to have a lot of fun. Free agency is right around the corner. The Bears have offensive linemen at the top of the priority list. We're going to go down to Atlanta and talk about Falcons Drew Dahlman, the center for the Falcons. We're going to talk to Josh Kendall from The Athletic. We're going to go to Indy and talk to James Boyd from the 107.5 Morning Show in Indianapolis about Will Fries. We're going to go out to San Francisco and talk to Evan Giddings from 95.7 about Aaron Banks. This is going to be a lot of fun. It's Mully and Haw, Ruthie Polinsky in for Mully on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
How about O-line? You're an ex-O-lineman. Do you feel like you know some things maybe that maybe another GM doesn't or have an advantage there?
Yeah, I think anyone that's played a position probably knows, the little details that they can pick up on to evaluate better. If it's offensive lineman and it's, the interior guys and the mental quickness you got to have, you kind of look at the eyes and see how they adjust. Something goes away and then boom, they come back to something coming to them. So you can almost feel that from your own reps that you've taken, which is important. But that's why, you rely on all your scouts that have different, expertise in different areas.
Welcome back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky in for Mully. That was Ryan Poles, the Bears general manager, on with PFT Live talking about free agency, which brings us to our next three guests. We're going to talk to somebody from Atlanta about Drew Dahlman, somebody from Indianapolis about Will Fries, and somebody from San Francisco about Aaron Banks. And all three of our guests are brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. They join us on the Score Hotline, and we'll begin with Josh Kendall from The Athletic, who covers the Falcons. Josh, thank you for joining us this morning. Let's start with the main question in Chicago. What makes Drew Dahlman the best center available in free agency?
Well, I think he's a guy that, going way back, Arthur Smith, the former head coach of the Falcons and an offensive lineman himself, felt like was a steal as a fourth-round pick. Really liked his potential. And it was probably slower to develop than they thought it might be. But he's worked with Dwayne Ledford, who is widely considered one of the, top third, at least, offensive line coaches in the league for a long time. And he's just a really solid player. He is not spectacular. I mean, I don't know that he's going to change your program, but he's a really good football player. And I think the Falcons are going to be pretty invested in bringing him back because they value consistency and continuity up front so much. But I don't know that they're going to make a blockbuster offer. So I think this will be a legitimate, bidding war may be too strong, but a competition.
Josh, I'm so curious about the relationship between a center and a quarterback. Obviously, the Falcons had a rookie quarterback play towards the end of the year. Do you know anything or can you shed any light on what his relationship was like with Michael Penix and his development?
Good. Drew is a very, but I don't know that I would, say special or unbreakable. But I'm not sure we know. Drew is a very private guy. He is not a big talker in the locker room. He's not a big sharer. He keeps everything to himself. Super intelligent guy. But I don't know that the Falcons would think we can't let Drew Dahlman go because of his relationship with Michael Penix. They've got a guy in the building named Ryan Neusel, a former UDFA draft, developed guy, who replaced Drew a few games while he was injured last year. And they felt okay about the production. And Neusel and Penix spent a lot of time together because they were both backups early on in the year. So I think Atlanta feels okay about that relationship. Drew Dahlman is a valued commodity in Atlanta. I don't think he is a sign or die guy for the Falcons.
There were some indications, and we're talking with Josh Kendall from The Athletic, who covers the Falcons down in Atlanta. There were some indications that Drew Dahlman wants to stay with the Falcons because of that security. And also, that maybe that was something put out there by his agent to create a little bit of leverage because he's going to sign a big deal. Does he want to stay with the Falcons based on your information? And is he worth as much as $18 million a year?
Boy, $18 million is a big number. I don't know. That's a big number. But I do think, I'm sure that anything his agent put out there is a negotiating tactic. That being said, I'm also sure he wants to stay in Atlanta. That's a really tight group in that offensive line room. They really like Dwayne Ledford. That core group, the starting five up front, has been together now basically for two full years. They get along. They play well together. They've sort of learned each other's intricacies. So, yes, I think Drew Dahlman, all things being equal, would want to stay in Atlanta. If the Bears come to $18 million and the Falcons are like, we're not going above 14 or 15, then, you know, then you've got to decide how much you want to stay in Atlanta, I suppose.
Real quickly, Josh, how much will the Kirk Cousins contract handicap the Falcons this offseason?
The money that they're going to have to commit to the salary cap for Cousins is basically going to be the same no matter what they do. A trade, a post-June 1 release, or keep him on the team, it's going to be around $40 million. It's $40 million that they had budgeted already, so it's been in their figuring. They're over the salary cap at this very moment, but they've got enough long-term deals and enough wiggle room that they can get to $25 million of space without too much trouble. So it's not like they won't be able to sign Dahlman if they want to. They'll have the money.
Josh, thank you so much for your time. Josh Kendall from The Athletic with insight on Drew Dahlman, the center for the Falcons, who is a free agent that the Bears likely will pursue next week. Let's go down to Indianapolis and bring in James Boyd from 107.5 The Morning Show, who can tell us all about Will Fries, the guard for the Colts. Good morning, James. Appreciate you joining us. We know you know the terrain with Bears fans. You're from Romeoville. You know the mindset of Bears fans well. Why should Bears fans want Will Fries on their offensive line?
I think it's because he's steady. One of the biggest things that he did this past season was just obviously protect the quarterback. And I believe he had a 4.1% pressure allowed rate last year, which would have been his career low had he played the full season. Broke his leg in week 5, which is always a weird term. He did not break his own leg. Someone else broke it for him. But, you know, from what I understand, he's mending really well, no setbacks there. And from what I understand, should also command a good amount on the open market because it's not like an ACL or an Achilles. Bones tend to heal better than ligaments. And so I would imagine him being at full strength by the time the season starts.
Do you think the Colts are going to make a strong push to keep him? Obviously, he's only 26 years old, but that injury may hold some hesitation.
I think that they will make a big push to keep him, mainly because they're going through their own offensive line change. And another big name in the Chicago / Indy market is Ryan Kelly at center. It looks like the Colts might move on from him. And so I wouldn't imagine they will also want to move on from their right guard, who's younger and probably a little bit better at this point in his career. So they'll make a push for him for sure. And it sounded like Chris Ballard, the Colts GM, wants to make him a priority in free agency. So we'll see.
Will Fries was a 7th-round draft pick in 2021. It sounds like a guy who has ascended to this point might be a try-hard guy, a good team guy, somebody who takes his commitment seriously and also may feel a little bit of an allegiance to the team that helped him become the player he is now. How much will that factor in potentially, James, into his decision in free agency?
I think that's a huge factor because, as you said, he kind of grew up, you know, within this franchise, rose through the ranks, went from being a 7th-round pick, which was kind of a flyer pick, to being a guy who was a staple of their offensive line. And so talking to him at the end of the season, you could just tell it really hurt him to miss so much of the season. And the guys really respected how he still fought to try to come back as soon as possible and rehab and encourage the rest of the team. And so I would imagine that's a factor. But like with most things, you know, money can change your loyalty. And so, you know, if he gets a better offer from somewhere else, I wouldn't be surprised if he moves on. But I do think that the injury itself might have helped the Colts a little bit because they have his medical records. They know him better than anybody else in his body. And perhaps it makes him a bit cheaper than he would have been had he played the full season out.
How would you describe Will's locker room personality, his leadership style, what he is, you know, in the locker room, but also maybe on the field?
So he's a nasty guy on the field, obviously. You love that, an offensive lineman, tough, gritty, and usually he's not out of position, which is always what you want to see from your offensive lineman. As far as personality goes in the locker room, he is boring, and I say that in a good way. Anytime you're not bringing him up too much, that means he's not messing up mm-hmm. when he's doing his job. But he's a pretty, you know, a guy that keeps to himself, not a, you know, a rah-rah guy from what I understand. But again, leads kind of by example, has earned the respect of his teammates, and obviously can have some fun there when they get in the end zone. I love to see that from the big guys because most of them are just like prototypical, you know, laid-back guys where you see some fire come out on the field. I think he has that element to him as well.
One more question for James Boyd, who covers the Colts for the 107.5 Morning Show in Indianapolis. So he's the other guard besides Quentin Nelson, because it's all about Quentin Nelson and has been for some time in Indy. Quentin Nelson's a nasty player, playing offensive guard and offensive line. Does Will Fries have any nasty in him?
Absolutely, yeah. I would say, you know, Quentin Nelson's a little prickly sometimes. He's a little nasty with us. I'm like, man, I'm scared to ask you a question. Every now and then, he can be like that. I think Will is a little more approachable. But nonetheless, I do think he is someone who has sort of like solidified himself as a, you know, incumbent starter if he comes back to the Colts, and someone who could start on somebody else's team. So he'll command a lot of interest, I'm sure. I definitely think that he is somebody who has earned that interest because of his play level. And I'm excited to see what he gets on the market. I asked him about it at the end of the season. I said, hey, I understand you're coming back from the injury, but, you know, the market is going to be out there. You're going to be a free agent. But he was just saying, I'm trying to get healthy, and we'll take it from there and let my agent handle everything else. So assuming his agent is a good one, he should get a nice raise. You know, thinking of a guy who, you know, wasn't making very much these last few years to now being in a position where, you know, according to some websites you look at, I know Spotrac has it at, you know, $14 million annually, 4 years, $56 million. And so I would put him somewhere in that $13 to $15 million range, you know, in the open market.
James Boyd, you did Romeoville proud. Thanks very much for your time. Let's go out to San Francisco. Evan Giddings covers the 49ers for 95.7 The Game. He is expert on the 49ers and the offensive line situation involving Aaron Banks, the Domer, who was a free agent the Bears might pursue next week. Good morning, Evan. What can you tell us about the reasons why Aaron Banks would be somebody the Bears would want?
How's it going? Number one, cash. Aaron Banks has kind of priced him out of that San Francisco 49ers range, and the Niners have not really been a team that has, outside of Trent Williams, spent big on the offensive line. I think they've drafted pretty well beyond the first round. They've never really spent much high capital there, but they've been able to cobble together some pretty effective offensive lines for a top tier up until this season, rushing attack with whoever's been in the backfield. So Aaron Banks has played himself, I think, out of the price range of the San Francisco 49ers. That's why he's available.
What can you tell us about the injury? I know he was on injured reserve last season. What can you tell us about that and the recovery?
Well, Banks, yes, like a lot of the 49ers last year, was someone who got hit by the injury bug and then sort of just ended up, I think, kind of fading towards the end of the season. But this is a player that is 2 years removed from, I think, having one offensive penalty against him as far as holds go. So this is a good run blocker, solid pass blocker, and kind of a plug-and-play type player. Aaron Banks is somebody that, you know, the injury wouldn't necessarily concern me, especially due to his age, relatively young, coming up on that first contract. The injury is something that I would expect him to be able to put behind him.
According to True Media, in three seasons and 43 starts, Aaron Banks has allowed just two sacks and 14 quarterback hits. That sounds like a very dependable guy when healthy. Is that the big caveat, though, when healthy? Do you consider him injury-prone, and do you think that is something that would maybe lower his price tag?
I don't know if I'd consider him injury-prone, but I do think you're spot on. That's going to impact the price point that he's going to be able to command. We're not going to see this guy be towards the top tier, the top end, I believe, of the guard market, but just someone that the San Francisco 49ers, considering their cap situation where they want to allocate their money, where they've traditionally allocated their money, is not someone they're going to prioritize. So Aaron Banks is going to be able to make himself a pretty penny. I don't think injuries are going to play a massive part in regards to how teams see him and his availability in the future, but it absolutely could impact how much money he's able to command in the open market. Should say the Chicago Bears want to bring him in.
Are the 49ers a team with enough cap space to be aggressive in matching any offer? Are they willing and able to, or have they accepted the fact that they're going to have to maybe, you know, lose some guys because this is a different offseason for them? They're clearing all kinds of money and room to sign Brock Purdy, who's going to get all the cash, apparently. How does this fit into their financial picture and how that might affect his availability?
Yeah, boy, Brock Purdy, that is Pandora's box. But as far as the San Francisco 49ers cap situation, I just don't think, even though I believe their issues lie in the trenches, you know, they're a team that's looking in free agency to try and spend a little bit more on the outside. They obviously just traded Debo Samuel for a fifth-round pick to get off of money, and I think they need an extra cornerback now that Charvarius Ward is likely going to be gone. Rumors have it Asante Samuel Jr. is their top target there. So the money that they're right now allocating are either for their own, Brock Purdy. I also think that George Kittle is someone you can see get a contract extension this season coming off back-to-back all-pro years. And then it's basically the rest of the pie is up to young Brock Purdy, which sounds strange enough, but he's going to get a pretty penny. So the free agency market for the Niners is relatively bare, but I would expect to see them dabble in the wide receiver and the cornerback market this offseason.
One more question for Evan Giddings, who covers the 49ers for 95.7 The Game in San Francisco. May seem like a dumb one, but we ask this all the time about quarterbacks and maybe running backs and even receivers to a lesser degree. The scheme and how much that brings out and accentuates certain talents in a quarterback, running back, or receiver. What about the scheme of the 49ers' offensive line and their offense and how it affects offensive linemen? Is this scheme ideal for his skill set? And do you think that changing schemes, you might see a different player?
You're talking as far as the quarterback?
No, I'm talking in terms of Banks, Aaron Banks.
Oh, gotcha. As far as Banks is concerned, I think the Niners do a pretty good job of more with less. And it doesn't mean that their linemen have not been that talented. You've seen Mike McGlinchey go out and get paid. They've been able to get other guys big contracts in the past. But I do think that it lends itself to being, you know, more of a run-first offense. You're going to see a lot more talent there, say, from someone like Aaron Banks. They don't put as much pressure on them in the pass pro just because you also play with a fullback, which not many offenses do, and you have extra protection in the backfield. I think they do a good job of covering up their quarterback, as you mentioned, schematically. So where I would look to the advantages of the scheme offense as far as how it promotes offensive linemen, it would be running the football. You know, as far as pass protection, anyone beyond Trent Williams, in my mind, is a little bit of a toss in the air, though someone like Aaron Banks has been statistically good during his time in San Francisco. So I think it lends itself to being more of a run-first type of offensive lineman.
Evan, thank you so much for your time and your insight.
Thank you, Evan.
Absolutely, anytime. Thank you.
Evan Giddings from 95.7 The Game in San Francisco, along with James Boyd from Indianapolis and Josh Kendall from The Athletic down in Atlanta. All three guests joined us on the Score Hotline presented by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com.
That was so fun.
That was fun.
I loved that.
1, 2, 3. All three of those guys will be legitimate options when the Bears begin the process of pursuing them officially Monday, because the window opens Monday. Officially, I think you can start signing players Wednesday. And next week is the football flea market, as Dan Wiederer from the Tribune referred to it yesterday on the Score. And you better bring a lot of money, Ryan Poles, because he's got a lot to spend, but you have a lot that you need.
Real quick, one note about Drew Jalman that Josh brought up was his offensive line coach, Dwayne Ledford, who I have heard unbelievable things about this man as a coach, someone that is maybe on track to be a head coach one day just because of his leadership style and the group that they've put together there. I think that offensive line and everything that I've heard about that connection in that group, and he talks about him maybe wanting to stay there just because of that group.
Yeah.
Don't you dream of a situation like that here? Like, Dan Roshar, come on. Like, let's get guys here that fit together, that mesh together, that can be well coached and developed. I mean, I just, as he was talking about sort of the vibe that
you
they have in Atlanta.
That, because the money can be irresistible. And I asked about $18 million because that's the top of the market. And I think that it's maybe unrealistic to think that Drew Dahlman could be that kind of a guy, but supply and demand. You don't know, and you don't want to be surprised by, boy, didn't expect him to be that high. He might go that high just because the Bears may be willing to go that high given their cap situation. But other things may factor in. You don't know how much he values that comfort you described and how much he wants to play for the team that has drafted and developed him.
Right. You just dream of a situation like that being developed, being, in the process of making here. And hopefully Dan Roshar and Ben Johnson can get that show on the road.
It's a lot of fun and good insight. We'll continue to talk about free agency throughout the week as we get nearer to Monday. The Score is giving you a chance to win a trip to Florida for the ultimate college basketball viewing experience March 20th to the 23rd. Odyssey's Buckets and Bets at Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino Hollywood in Florida is your destination for tip-off weekend. So continue to listen. Enter now with the keyword BRICK at 670thescore.com for your chance to win. The keyword is BRICK, which is what you might see tonight or here tonight as the Bulls chuck up three-pointers against the Cavaliers at the United Center. Listen anyway, it's going to be the Bulls and Cavs. But next, it's a Layla Tuesday. Layla Rahimi in here with Marshall Harris and Dan Bernstein. It's Mullin Haw with Ruthie Polinsky in for Mully. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.